Then in the seventh canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15, verse 20, there it says, speaking of these strong urges, so hunger and thirst, very strong urges, no doubt, but they can be satisfied. You can satisfy hunger by eating, you can satisfy thirst by drinking. And then anger is mentioned. Anger is very, very powerful. Very powerful emotion. Very destructive, yet even anger can be satisfied. And it is explained there, if one is able to vent chastisement against the object of anger. Someone has somehow disturbed us, and if we can shout at them, sometimes throw something at their head. Of course, devotees don't act like this, I hope. But if there's a release, then the anger dissipates. But then this verse goes on to say, but for lobha, there is no satiation at all. So therefore we see old men who have become rich in business. You see, they have a lot of money. They have achieved everything that anyone would consider to be reasonable success. They have got. And they're very old. So they can't enjoy anything anymore anyway, too old. But still they want to make more money. And you ask them why. You ask them why? Because you at your age, you're not going to enjoy anything more. You see, at your age, your doctor has told you to eat very less and to eat very bland foods anyway. If you try to eat rich foods, you'll have a heart attack and die, so you don't do that. You try to do anything, you have to take 5-6 pills, you see, to avert heart attack or something else, stroke. You can hardly move, but you're still calculating how to make more money, more money, more money, more money. And this is the last outlet for that pent-up material desire. You see, material desire is always there, right up to the end of life. But when everything else goes, then there's only one last outlet, and that's greed. So this gentleman, he has no need to make money. He's got everything, but still he wants to make more. Still scheming. Wheeling and dealing, making plans. So greed never satisfied. And in the purport to this verse, 7:15:20, Srila Prabhupada states there that greed is the greatest enemy caused by the Raju Guna. That's very interesting, because one may think from Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 that the greatest enemy caused by Raju Guna is lust. But here, this is why I said, there's even evidence that more dangerous enemy than lust is greed. So that means of all six, it is extremely formidable enemy. If not the most powerful, then certainly one of the very most powerful enemies. I'd like to tell you a little story to illustrate how this greed works. Upon the minds of men, there was a brahmana who had a wonderful mystic power, and that was that on one night of the year when the moon would be in a certain position, in a certain constellation, the stars were arranged in a certain way, only one night a year. Then, if he would chant a mantra, a very secret mantra that he alone knew, the result of chanting this mantra would be that it would rain in the night, but it would not be a rain of water, it would be a rain of seven kinds of most precious jewels. So this Brahmana had one disciple who was very intelligent. And they were traveling from one city to another, going through a lonely forest. And suddenly they found themselves surrounded by dacoits, by robbers who were stepping out from behind trees on all sides. And this was a band of robbers who were known by the name the dispatchers, which meant that they're technique, their strategy was, they would capture a party. They would always look for a group, two or more persons traveling through the forest, and they would capture them. And they would determine who among this group was the most important. And that one they would keep. And a less important person or persons, they would let go. But with the instruction that you go and collect a big ransom and bring it back here, and then we'll let this person go. So they captured this Brahmana and his disciple, and they could understand that the important person here is the Brahmana, and he's the disciple. So they told the disciple, we'll let you go, but you'll come back with, and they named some amount of money that they wanted. You come back with that, and we'll return your teacher to you safe and sound. So it so happened that this night, this coming night that they were captured, was that night, that one night of the year, that the Brahmin, if he chanted that mantra, would cause a rain of jewels to come down. So the disciple asked, can I just have a few short words alone with my guru? And they said, all right. So he said, Guruji, please, I fear that if you would use that power tonight to free yourself, that this will bring upon you great misfortune. So please don't let them know that you have any power. I'll go back and collect that money. I can do it. You just have to be patient. Please. And so the Brahmin said, all right. And his disciple went. But then the thieves, they were keeping him tied to a tree, and they were sitting around and they were talking in their rough, you know, criminal language, using bad words. And this Brahmana was a very refined person. He didn't like to be tied up. He didn't like to hear this type of speech. He didn't like to see these ugly people, their gross mannerisms. He felt very disgusted. And time went on, and the sun went down, and the moon came up. And he began to think, if I just chanted this mantra, they would have more wealth than they could dream of, and they would certainly let me go. But my disciple, he asked me not to do it because he saw some danger. But who's he? He's my disciple. I'm not his disciple. So I'm the one who should say if it's right or wrong. And I think I should do this. So then he said, he began to speak to the men. And he said, why are you keeping me here like this? And they said, because we want money. We want ransom. That's all. That's all you want. Yes. And how much do you want? And they named the amount. And then the Brahmana said, what if I, this very night, were to provide you with wealth that is infinitely greater than this amount you're expecting? Wealth beyond your wildest dreams. Would you let me go this very night? And they said, without a doubt, certainly we'd let you go. Can you really give us such wealth? And he said, you untie me, you let me take a bath, you let me open my travel bag and put on clean cloth, you get string some flowers together, make a garland, let me wear a garland, let me stand up and look up at the moon and chant a mantra, and you'll see what happens. So they thought, it's not unreasonable. And so all this happened. He chanted the mantra. Clouds suddenly formed in the night sky, and a rain of seven kinds of gems came falling down right at that spot. And these thieves were going wild. They were jumping and shouting and trying to catch the gems in their hats and bags and holding their kurtas out, and they were scrambling on the ground to pick up. But there was so much. And then finally it stopped. And the thieves, because it was dark, you know, so they were looking around and collecting so much and so happy. And they saw the Brahmin standing there. Oh, you can go, you can go. We don't need you anymore. This is the end of our life as thieves. We'll never have to rob anyone again. We'll live comfortably for the rest of our days, no problem. So they were so happy. But then just at that moment, another band of robbers appeared. And these dispatchers, they were more, you see, a little more refined because of their method. But this new band that appeared, they were just cutthroats. They were just murderers. They didn't care to let anyone go and get ransom. They would just kill and loot. That was their policy. So these cutthroats stepped out with their drawn weapons. And the dispatcher band, they saw them and they fell on their knees and were begging for their lives and pointing to the Brahmin. You don't need to do anything to us. You just get this Brahmin to chant his mantra and you'll get the same wealth for yourselves. And you'll all be happy. We can all live together. And so then these cutthroats, they surrounded the Brahmin with their weapons pointed at him. You chant that mantra again. And the Brahmin said, dear sirs, the one thing about this gift I have is that I can only use it once a year. And I just used it. So if you'll be so patient as to wait 1 year, I'll come back and I'll chant it for you. And before he even finished talking, they had cut off his head. They had killed him right on the spot. And then they turned on this other group of thieves and killed all of them. And then, after they were dead, they got a chance to really look at how much was there, how many jewels were there, and it was such amount that they had never seen. And being a very murderous lot, they began to fight with each other. So this group divided into two groups, and they were battling it out and killing one another until finally there were only two men left. And because there were so many jewels, and the two men thought, well, we can't keep fighting because we won't be able to carry this off. So we have to work together. But still they were scheming. Each one was thinking, this is going to be all mine before the night is through. But right now, I need this person, so we'll work together. So they gathered all the loot together in bags, and they went to their hideout, which was near the edge of one village. And after all this nefarious work, they were very hungry. So one said to the other, "You stay here and guard, and I'll go into the village and get some food." And the first one said, "All right, you do that." So he went to the village and he got food, but he was very clever to put poison in the plate for this other fellow. He laced it with very deadly poison. And then he came back with a big smile on his face. "I brought food for you," and he put it in front of him. And the other fellow said, "Thank you very much, I don't need you anymore," and stabbed him in the heart and killed him. Then he sat down and he ate his food, and he fell over dead too. Now this happened somewhere in Madhya Pradesh. Those jewels are still there. If you want to go on an expedition, you may find them. I'm just joking. But anyway, the point of this story is to show how all-consuming this greed is. There is simply no stopping it. Reason, reasonable words, you see, kindness, understanding, all of it, it doesn't work. Greed is insatiable. And in the end, utterly destructive. So, then how do we overcome this greed? So thinking back to my introduction to the workings of the mind, the answer is that the mind as a whole has to be purified. It has to come out of this guna prabaha state, this state of being agitated by the modes of material nature. Because as long as it is so agitated, then these unwanted but irresistible urges will continue to pour into the mind from the subconscious and take control and push us into sinful activities and push us into further and further karmas and rebirths in this world. So what is the process for purifying the mind? There is a basic process, which is the essential sadhana, the essential practice of this Krishna consciousness movement. And that is, of course, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. I already alluded to this when I mentioned that Lord Chaitanya's Shikshashtakam verses begin with what? Cheto Darpana Marjanam. That this mind must be cleansed. And how is it to be cleansed? By chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in the Kali Santran Upanishad, Lord Brahma tells Narada, Iti Shorasha Kalasya Jivasya Varana Vinashanam, that the soul, the consciousness, is covered, varanam, covered by 16 layers. And actually, all these layers, they all pertain to the subtle body. Because every one of them is to be found within the subtle body. So 5 of these 16 are Gyanindriyas, sight, sound, seeing power, hearing power. And then there are the Tanmatras, what is seen, what is heard, that's also 5. So that adds up to 10. So these sensual powers and the objects of the senses, they're all subtle. They're all subtle. They exist within the mind. And then, that's 10, then up to 15, we add the karmendriyas, the active senses, and then the 16th is the mind itself, the functions of the mind itself. So the mind has different functions. They're called vrittis or occupations. The mind is sometimes engaged with the senses, yes. But the mind is also engaged with its own self. This is called manasovritti or abhiman. One of the features of this vritti is kalpana, imagination. So this is the mind just working with itself. And it's this vritti, manasovritti, which is the most powerful. All the other vrittis are serving this mind. Sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting, rejecting. That's another function of the mind. So it's the mastery of the other 15. Most formidable. So there are these 16 coverings, but there are also 16 names of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. 16. So, iti shodashakala shajiva shivarna minashanam tatakrashri parabrahma negapai ravi rasvi mandaliviti. This verse says that the 16 names of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra cut through and destroy these 16 coverings of pure consciousness. And just as when the clouds in the sky are removed, we can see the sun as plain as day, as it is said. So similarly, when these layers of contaminated consciousness are eradicated, then Parabrahma, Tataprakashate Parabrahma, one can see Parabrahman, Sri Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as plain as day, through the purified, clear consciousness of the soul. So, of course, this explanation that I've just given you, it is essential. But we find it difficult, isn't it, simply to chant Hare Krishna. It would be very nice if 24 hours a day we could chant Hare Krishna. Then certainly our mind would become completely free of greed and lust and anger, etc. And we would be seeing Krishna 24 hours a day. But our problem is that we are not able at this stage to simply chant Hare Krishna like Srila Haridas Thakur did. He chanted every day 196 rounds of japa. So if you try to just once in your life, one day in your life, chant 196 rounds, you would find that extremely challenging. You see, even 64 rounds. Even 64 rounds. This is a very great challenge. So then what to do? So then we have this mission of Krishna consciousness, which is simply a mission of service to the Holy Name. The Holy Name has come into this world with a mission, and that is to spread to every town and village. This is the Yuga Dharma, and it is meant to go everywhere. So the Krishna consciousness movement facilitates that spreading of the Holy Name. So there are so many activities by which we may serve the Holy Name's entering into every town and village, into the life of every person on this planet. And so all these services, they together combine to form what we see here, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, this worldwide mission that Srila Prabhupada established. So all of these activities being nama-seva, then they are likewise cleaning the heart. Now, when we talk about mission, we're talking about movement, and we're talking about movement, we're talking about sangha, association. And this sangha, this association, is essential. It is the foundation of the activities of this movement. Adau Shraditata Sadhusanga. The spreading of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra through the world creates Shraddha in people. You see, just by having the holy name, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, enter their ears and go into their heart, Shraddha, faith, attraction, is generated. And so what must follow? What must follow is Sangha. They seek out devotees. They enter into that association. So their spiritual life begins here, in Sangha. So the whole movement is based on Sangha. So Sangha, association of devotees, is a great opportunity for us to overcome the dirty things that are stored deep in our heart. Likewise, it is a great opportunity, the same Sangha, to become overwhelmed by those dirty things. So, what determines which direction we move in the association of devotees? What determines it is our embracing of, I mentioned the Shikshashtikam. So one of the verses of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshashtikam is one that we're supposed to wear like a garland around our neck. Srinadapi Sanichana Torariva Sahishnam. Here Lord Chaitanya is elaborating on humility as being the key, the very key by which one becomes successful in this process of chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Kirtaniya Sadahari. One who has actually become humble can then chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra unbrokenly all the time, can actually achieve that goal that we're saying is so difficult to achieve a little while ago. It can be achieved through this Krishna consciousness movement, through specifically this Sangha, this association of devotees. If we practice this profound humility that Lord Chaitanya is teaching, to be more humble than a straw on the street, more tolerant than a tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expecting no praise, no acknowledgement, no claps for ourselves. If one adopts this attitude of, well, what is this attitude? It's attitude of servant, das. In the Krishna consciousness movement, when one is initiated, one gets the name of Krishna or Srimati Radharani with das, dasi. So this is the position we aspire for. Absolute humility before the Lord and His devotees. This is the position which is secure, yes, and also nourishing to all the positive qualities of a devotee. Safe from the stock of desires, the six enemies, all the inauspicious things that are lying in the subconscious, we are secured from that. And we cultivate the transcendental qualities of the devotee simply by maintaining this quality of humility that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has spoken about. And then, in that mood, we can derive from the association devotees Krishna's mercy, because Krishna's mercy flows through the devotees. The nectar of Krishna consciousness is made available through the devotees. Satam prasanga mamavir samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasanayana kata. Lord Kapila Dev says that when satam prasanga, when the association of devotees is most strong, in that most strong, powerful association, then the nectar of the topics of Krishna consciousness, Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Katha, is experienced, Prit Karna, by the heart and by the ear. Rasanaya, we taste rasa, Katha, in hearing about Krishna. On the other side, if we are not careful to practice this humility, to follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his bona fide representatives in this sampradaya, and we allow pratishta. Pratishta means spiritual pride. Prabhupada defines it as pride in being a Vaishnava. So spiritual pride, the form of pride that comes up after one has, so to speak, surrendered to Krishna or taken to Krishna consciousness, then this will cause division between ourselves and other devotees. And in that division, if we act divisively, we commit offenses, aparad, and then this aparad, particularly Vaishnava aparad, spoils everything. It results in the most terrible kind of obstacles in spiritual life. Very, very difficult to overcome. Even more, offenses against devotees is even more difficult to overcome than offenses against the holy name of the Lord or offenses against the deity. So it's in these areas that we have to work to overcome greediness or any of the enemies of the mind. We have to chant, concentrate on chanting Hare Krishna to penetrate into the lower region, subconscious region of the mind, to purify it. And we have to concentrate, work upon keeping very nice relationships with devotees, very sweet relationships, nectarian relationships with devotees, by practicing humility, Vaishnava humility. And if we can maintain that, then you see, so much mercy will come our way, because Krishna will be so pleased with us. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be so pleased with us. So in this mercy, when we speak of this mercy coming to those who are endeavoring, who are attentive in this way I've just described, and then there are so many details, just like here in the Chaupati, you're known for this counseling that you do. So this is very good. This is, in the West, this is called talk therapy. This is a very good way of addressing people's mental problems. Talk therapy. But you see, counseling works only when there are very nice relationships between devotees. Because such kind of counseling depends on, as Prabhupada said, love and trust. You see, if you're sitting before someone who's supposed to be your counselor, but you don't love him and you don't trust him, then you're not going to tell him what he should know to counsel you. You're going to have so many secrets that you keep in a dark place in your heart. And these secrets will eat away at the inside of your heart. There's the story of the poacher and the fox. There was a poacher, you know, a poacher, an illegal hunter. And he was in the forest of the king. And he was always dressed in a very long coat that went down to his ankles. And he had set a trap and caught a fox. Fox was alive, and he was very happy to have a fox, because the pelt of a fox is worth a lot of money. But then just at that moment, the king himself came riding up on his horse. And this poacher, he put the fox under his coat and kept it there. And the king was riding along. The king was in a very good mood, so he saw this man in the forest. And he just didn't think that he might be a poacher. He just thought he's just someone out for a walk in the royal forest, and it's a very nice day. So then the king on his horse, he stopped to talk with the man. He was in a very good mood. "So how are you, sir?" "Oh, your majesty, I'm very fine. Yes, I'm just going for a ride through my lands. And have you seen anything out here today? Anything unusual? Anything you'd like to tell me about? Oh, no, no, really, it's just been very nice and, you know, good weather. And, So then in this way, the king was keeping up the conversation, and the poacher was standing there. He was looking in his face a little pale, and tears were coming out of his eyes, but he was still talking. And finally the king rode off, and the poacher fell in two pieces. Why did he fall in two pieces? Because the fox under his coat ate through his body. You see? Ate him into two pieces. And then he fell in two pieces and the fox ran away. So when we're keeping secrets, you see, it's like keeping a fox under your coat. It eats away at your insides. Finally, you just fall apart. This is psychology. This is well known. So the whole point of counseling is that we can open our heart. No morbid dark secrets. Let in fresh air. Let in light. In this way, be relieved. Get strength and go on. But this is based on love and trust. So this counseling system between devotees, very nice. But it's one of the aspects of mercy that comes when we are basically trying to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra sincerely and trying to keep very nice relationships with devotees. Keep a very good standard of sadhu sangha. So this is as I said, I'm only able to speak in basic ways, but this is a basic way to overcome greed in the heart. And another thing, of course, is that Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Kama Esha, what is that? Kama Krishna Seva Kamarpane Krodha Bhakti Dvisijane Loba Sadhu Sangha Hari Kata Moha Ishta Labha Bene Madha Krishna Gunan Gana Nirupta. So this, he's saying in this verse that for five of the enemies of the mind, there are transcendental outlets or engagements. So Loba Sadhu Sangha Hari Kata. It's very interesting. Lobha, we should desire very strongly. Hare Katha, to hear about Krishna within Sadhu Sangha. These are the two points I'm making, isn't it? This is what I was explaining. This is what we should be working on. So Narottam Das Thakur says, we should be greedy for this. This you're allowed to be greedy for. You can be greedy to have very nice association with devotees, and in that association, hear about Krishna. Chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This is an approved sort of greed. So, just like Kama Krishna Seva Kamarpane. We can be lusty also to serve Krishna. One should be very eager, enthusiastic to render service to Krishna. Krodha Bhakti Vesi Jane. Anyone who is envious of devotees, who wants to cause harm to devotees, we can be angry upon him. That anger is transcendental. Just like Hanuman. Hanuman was angry at Ravana. And that is approved in spiritual circles, that anger. No one criticizes Hanuman for being an angry fellow, couldn't control his anger. Everyone celebrates his great deeds in fighting Ravana and the Rakshasas. So there's one of these six enemies that we don't find an outlet for, and that's enviousness. Because that's the, you know, in some religion they talk about original sin. So in Krishna consciousness, that's the original sin. Being envious of Krishna and envious of Krishna's devotees. Of course, again, in a sense, Krodha Bhakti Dvesijane, to be angry to someone is also, in a sense, to be envious. So one, again, can be angry towards enemies of the Lord's devotees. That's all right. But the mood of envy, to be envious of one another in Krishna consciousness, this is totally destructive and should not be entertained in any way. So yes, there is a valid outlet for lobha, for greed, to desire the association of devotees and in that association to hear and chant about Krishna. And that is the actual cure for the material version of lobha. So it's just past 8:30. I'm going to stop here. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a wonderful presentation. As you mentioned, Narottama Thakur was Am Krishna's friend of Bhakti, So there he's giving, as you mentioned, different outlets for his anathas within the heart. So what is the outcome of utilizing the anathas, locating the anathas in that way? Like you gave the example of Hanumanji, who utilized his anger in the service of the Lord. So what would be the outcome, that he would be ultimately, purified of that anger, or what is the ultimate aim, to be completely purified of any anger altogether, or to...
I understand your question. The goal of Krishna consciousness is to develop purified emotions, which we know by the name of rasas. So there are five main rasas and seven minor supportive rasas. And one of these minor rasas is actually anger, krodha. So these purified emotional states exist eternally in the spiritual world, and they flavor the relationship between Krishna and his devotees. The five main rasas are the five main flavors, and the seven minor rasas are sort of spices of those main flavors. So, emotions are originally spiritual. We have material emotions because our spiritual, original spiritual state is reflected in the material energy. That's why we have a material form, that's why we have material mind, and that's why we have material emotions. And we are in this material state because our consciousness is bent, warped away from Krishna. This state is called Duratma, crooked soul. Our consciousness, which is meant for flowing to Krishna, has been bent away from Krishna, and therefore we're in this material condition. Now, Krishna consciousness is a process of channeling our consciousness back to Him. And that entails, again, the development of these rasas. So, we do not want to become emotionless, simply, you know, Om Shanti, 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 and all of that bland, passive, sterile, non-responsive, impersonal. That's not the goal of the Vaishnava. Vaishnava seeks loving devotional service. Loving. That is the state of purified emotions. So that's the goal of the purifying process of Krishna consciousness.